Welcome to Holden Village. Today is the 20th of June, 2002. In the Koinonia Fireside Room this evening, we are having a director's forum on the vision of the future of Holden, number 2. Today's session number is SHD 2002. Let's listen in.
I think we're starting to see the signs of tiredness from a busy, wonderful week. Even dinner didn't have a whole lot of people there, so I think there's lots of people taking over.
I think they went hiking.
Oh, they went hiking? I actually did see people that said they came down from the third level. They went up there for a little
hike. Rick had a tour up there.
What?
Rick took a tour up there today.
Oh, okay. All right.
He did a mining.
I have a mining.
Should they come back?
Well, we have a empty chair for the fourth person who's on our management team, and that's Molly Archer, who is our business manager. It's possible she's still coming. It's possible.
Yep. There she is.
There she is. Oh, good. All right. Because I did want to introduce ourselves as the management team for Holden. And certainly the plans that have been developing have been the work of all four of us. One of the things is I look around and see mostly very familiar people, but just because we're familiar by name and personality doesn't mean that you know what we do. In fact, some of you probably wonder what we do. So by way of introductions, we'll do just a little tiny bit of our job description to kind of show how we work together. I'm Diane Scheiner. I've been a co-director with Janet here since June of 2000. And when Janet and I were getting together to try to figure out who will do what part of this job, we came up with a kind of an idea of ourselves, sort of, would you mind sitting over here so we can, thank you. Thinking of ourselves as sort of joined at the heart in terms of our commitment to Holden, but somewhat facing in different directions. My job is to face a little bit, to lean toward the outside. It doesn't mean that I don't care or that I don't get involved or work on a lot of things that Janet takes the lead on, but the things that I'm more focused on are things like fund development, public relations, contracts, some of the financial infrastructure, those kinds of things, going out to Holden circles and so on, relationships with other organizations and those parts of things. And so I certainly participate in a lot of the others, but that's where I kind of take the lead.
Okay. My job is called operations manager. And I'm responsible for the maintenance and operation of Holden's physical plant. And that means supervising the remodeling projects and construction projects, overseeing our utilities, transportation, and safety. Along with those responsibilities comes a certain amount of long-range planning and dealing with outside agencies and permitting and giving the occasional speech. Accomplish those things with 12 year-round staff, and sometimes with quite a few more than that, like right now. And part of my job description is to know how to do anything in case that person isn't here at the time.
And he does. I'm Janet Grant, and I serve with Diane as co-director in this term since 2000, as she said. I started in the director's office in 1994, so I've been here 8 years, which can seems hardly possible. As Diane leans to the outside, I lean to the inside. My tasks in the village encompass community life here in the village, including our staff. Staff recruitment and coordination here in the village, worship and program are kind of main areas that I kind of take responsibility for shepherding, and it's a real thrill for me to be able to work with the people who bring their gifts to those areas. So, we all have little extra things that we do here and there. One of my favorite hobbies in the village is helping buy the cards in the store. Diane's a bus driver, so we all try to find some extra things around the village that help us rub shoulders in different areas, and so that we know what's going on throughout the village.
So. Janet knows everything that's going on.
Whoops.
I'm Molly Archer, and I'm the business manager, sort of a compliment to Christopher in terms of running the different various areas of the village under Janet and Diane's direction. The areas that I'm responsible for are things like the food service, the kitchen area, although they pretty well take care of themselves most of the time, the bookstore, housekeeping, I know I'll miss some, and another is the down lake and the bed and breakfast operations. Basically, any of the operations that have to do with money, I have responsibility for. And then I also work with the contributions recorder and the bookkeeper and others that do keep track of how we're doing financially. I keep an eye on that, make sure that we're being good stewards of the gifts that Holden has received. Holden seems at this point in time to pretty much run in a very abundant manner. But still, even in the abundant times, I think I have the duty to watch how things are going out, make sure that everything is being recorded, being taken care of the way that it should be. And that's kind of my job, is just to set up, supervise and be sure that everything's on the right track from a financial point of view.
One of the first things that Janet brought to my attention when I started was that we had a 40th anniversary coming up and what were we going to do. So it was really at the beginning of that anniversary conversation, even back in 2000, that we started talking about the framework for the celebration. And as it evolved, we had a meeting in Seattle of different people with the longtime love of Holden, to just kind of generate ideas about what would be the best ways to celebrate. This work camp, for example, was one of the creations that was influenced by that meeting, and it's been such a wonderful time. But at that meeting, there was a lot of nostalgia. People were reminiscing about everything from the menus back in 1960-something to just all kinds of treasured memories and customs and hilarity and so on. And it came to be Elmer Witt's turn. This happened to be, most of you know that Elmer was the director here at one time. He was not only the director, though, but he was really part of that core group of thinkers that envisioned the purpose of Holden in the first place. And when it came around to Elmer's turn, and this was the last time that I saw him alive, because not too long after that, he went into surgery, and then he died this last December on Christmas Eve. But at that meeting, and this is the way I will always love to remember him, when it came to his turn, he had gotten impatient with the nostalgia and said, "That isn't the way we started this place. You know, what's coming up? What's in the future? That is what birthed all of these things that you're talking about. What's going to be birthed now?" And so even our idea of work camp and trying to replicate the spirit of the forerunners wasn't to go back and feel like we were forerunners of 1961, but to be forerunners for the future, that we are preparing this place physically, but also spiritually for our future. About a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit longer, our board took the lead on a visioning process about what should the picture be for 10 years from now. It was a very extensive process, and so we're going to try and walk through the different stages of that vision process to what it has led to. You are really experiencing it over this last week because now it's the beginning of coming to fruition. But Janet will describe, we're going to each take a piece of it and sort of give you a total picture of where we think we're going and how we're going to get there. that work that the board did sent us home with more work, and it was a joy for us to have a framework out of which to work. And we worked all winter as a foursome, developing some strategies that then were presented to the board last summer, right about now, and were given their stamp of approval and encouragement. So each one of us worked particularly with four different strategies that came out of the work of the board that had developed lots of different goals and had kind of honed those down, and then we developed strategies out of that. Also, last fall, we were involved in a feasibility study, and that feasibility study showed to us many things. One of them primarily being that our constituency wants to know that Holden will be viable and creative in its programmatic areas. And so that the creativity of the program that has been known to be Holden's will be here for future generations to come. For those of our families, our friends, those we encourage to come, those we don't even know. One of the strategies then that came out of that board work, and then as we developed things from that, was around program, and that was an area that I got to do some significant writing and thinking with the help of my colleagues here. We certainly were a team in writing these. I think we all agreed that was some of the hardest work we did, maybe so far, but at least that year. We worked hard together. We challenged one another. We supported one another. We tweaked each other's words and came up with these strategies. The strategy that I want to lift up to you as we move ahead now is I'm going to use the words of the strategy, offer challenging and practical resources for living faithfully. And out of that, we hope that we will, our goal in the 5 years that Diane and I plan to be here, and we hope these folks will be here a good share of that time as well, will be to provide resources that are transportable, that can be taken away from this place, that people can say, we tried this at Holden, I think we could try it this way at home. In particular, also, as a part of that, new worship resources that can be taken along the way. And we've been blessed to have with us for 2 years now our pastor, Ben Stewart, and he'll remain with us another year. And we're hopeful that in that, before he gets out of here, that we'll have some special things that we will share with the church, as in addition to the things we've already done together. Another one part of that strategy of providing resources is the resource of discernment. Holden has long been a place where people come when they're in transition, a place where people come to think, to dream, to pray, to get support from one another as we think about what's next in our lives. And this is a tool, a thing that we have done for many years and need to keep growing with that. And we want to provide some resources around that might be helpful to others as they leave this place. And then diversity is another area that in programmatically we want to grow in, that we want to challenge the church to grow in as well. Our volunteers are a program here, and they are our greatest asset, I think, and I think many of you would agree. We work hard to nurture those people in that program, and that is one area that we need to that we plan to continue to serve and to nurture. Youth is another area. In 2003, next summer, right about now, we expect to have a number of young people here who have all been writers of a new book that will be published this August under the edit of Dorothy Bass, who a few years back edited Practicing Our Faith. And she has brought together a number of teens to write a similar book for young people, and that book is coming out this summer. She's bringing many of those people to Holden next summer to kind of talk about what does it mean to practice your faith as a young person in these times. You may know that our Narnia and Miners program have been having a curriculum the last several years. This year is the first time both those curricula are meshed together, and they then are meshed, led by the theme of the entire village, the 740 years in the wilderness. Music and arts and worship are all in, have been important in the past, and they will continue to be. If those of you were here last night for that wonderful Vespers that Kristen Gilia led us into and with, and this piece, this is Kristen's work up here. This place is just rich with artwork. We had an art historian here last summer on teaching staff, and in her first visit, she is from Rock Island, Illinois, and she couldn't believe the community orientation of the artwork in this place. What a gift that is. Those are things that we want to lift up for the artist who can come and do like Kristen does for us, the musician, the potter, the sculptor, the person who wants to unwind yarn, just like Carl is doing over there. The person who has a calling or an interest towards creativity. Spiritual direction is something many of you probably know that we had a pilot program last year to try out. And through the summer, we had a spiritual director in the village who met one-on-one with folks and also did some group work as well as some teaching about what is spiritual direction. How do people define their work with their walk with God? And this year, it was so successful that this year there was no question about it. That we, in fact, Saturday, our spiritual director will arrive for the next 2 or 3 weeks. She'll be here, and we will continue to have a spiritual director through the summer. Also, different folks who have different styles will be with us throughout the summer. Laura's what a spiritual director. We don't have to convince her about the value of that. Hospitality then also is another important part of our program life in the village, and I want to just highlight the whole diversity aspect of that. Currently, we're in our third year of offering some outreach to communities of diversity that wouldn't be able to come to the village. 2 years ago, we invited one group. Last year, we had four groups. This year, we probably will have 5 or 6 groups. Our goal is to keep increasing that each year, at least by 10% each of the 5 years we're here. And so this past May, our May Youth Weekends, which are very popular, we have made a challenge to the region to help us bring more young people from diverse communities to the village by offering some scholarship funds and support to make that happen. This year they had 13 of their 851 people. We're part of that program. We're shooting for 50. We're not sure if we'll get 50 next year, but we're hopeful in the next couple of years, at least. So I'm going to pass on the baton to Christopher, who will kind of talk a little bit more about facilities and this place and how we can make all these things happen through that.
We have quite a few projects planned for the next 10 years. Approximately half the budget for the comprehensive campaign will be for capital improvements. And we've divided those up into 4 different sections. First of all is safety. We'll be upgrading a lot of our equipment and tools that need to meet WSHA requirements for the state of Washington. We'll be upgrading and replacing much of our fire alarm system. We'll be adding fire suppression capacity. We'll be re-roofing the chalets with non-combustible roofing material. And we'll be upgrading many of our buildings to meet modern life safety codes and upgrade those sprinkler systems. We have a lot of utility work to do. The powerhouse needs substantial work. We're going to continue to expand our load control system so we can make efficient use of our hydroelectric resource. The diesel generators will be replaced. Much of the power distribution system needs to be either put underground or replaced. And our water system needs to be completely replaced as well. The next section we call vehicles, equipment, and bridge. We need to continue to upgrade and replace our buses and vans and trucks, snow removal equipment. Our vehicle bridge needs replacement. and we're continually replacing washers and dryers and hot water heaters and kitchen equipment in the village. And lastly, about half the budget will go to remodeling projects, energy upgrades, construction, and maintenance. And the goals of those remodeling projects and construction projects are, first of all, to enhance program in the village. Also, preservation. Many of these buildings are in need of work just to preserve them, just to have them continue to exist. Also, a goal is to save energy, to reduce our dependence on firewood and diesel fuel in order to be better stewards of the Earth's resources. And many of the safety projects will be integrated in the remodeling. In Lodge 1, we put in fire doors, smoke-sealed fire doors, one-hour separations between all the buildings, smoke detectors in every room now, a completely upgraded fire alarm system and expanded sprinkler system. And lastly, hospitality. We hope to make the buildings more inviting, less drafty, less mice, and better community spaces for guests and staff, and more accessible to folks with physical challenges. The remodeling projects that we have planned are, first of all, starting this late summer, we'll be remodeling Lodge 6 and Chalet 6. And at the same time, this is an ambitious fall, we'll be replacing our diversion dam, the source of our hydroelectric power, drinking water, and fire protection water. Primarily, we'll be doing that for safety, energy, and hospitality reasons. So if you'd like to join us this fall, we would love to have you. As you can see, it takes a lot of people to remodel one of our buildings with volunteers. So we would welcome you and your friends to join us this fall. A year from now, we expect to build Chalet 2. And Chalet 2 is our one opportunity at actually creating additional space in the village. We have reason to expect the Forest Service and the state will allow us to rebuild Chalet 2 because it did exist at one time. And the ultimate goal of rebuilding Chalet 2 is to create additional programming space in the village. While that programming space won't be in Chalet 2, it will allow us to convert other space to programming. Which brings us to the next remodel, which is this building we're in right now. We would like to convert Koinonia to 100% programming. And we have many hopes and ideas about how to make that happen. We want to create another creekside room, another space for a classroom, for meeting, and for art. We hope to enhance and create a better craft area, better lit. Many people love to do crafts here, and we always have a shortage of space for that. And we also would like to improve and consolidate our library space for Koinonia. And at the same time, we'll be saving energy, we'll be making the buildings safer and more hospitable. There's many other projects that we have planned that we will accommodate as we can. Some years, like this next year, we'll be doing two projects. And the exact order we haven't determined, but we'd like to continue remodeling chalets and remodel Chalet 5 and 8 through 14, some of them completely and some of them to lesser degrees. We want to remodel the hotel basement to create more efficient space down there, as well as do all the safety and energy upgrades we're doing in other places. All throughout the village, the log corbels are rotting, and we are hoping to replace all of those as part of this comprehensive campaign. Metal roofs, many of the metal roofs need replacement in the village. And we want to create a play field in Narnia for basketball down at this elevation, along with picnic area and grassy spaces for horseshoes and tetherball and other games. And we want to make a year-round contemplative space, sometimes called a postinia, a place that's always available for prayer, for quiet time. And we hope to do that in what was originally the Chalet 1 garage. So that's a thumbnail sketch of our next 10 years. If you don't think we can get that done in 10 years, I did provide a list of what we've done in the last 5 years, which means it can be done. And, you know, whether we accomplish all these or not, you know, it depends on who comes, who is our staff, whether we continue to have weeks like we've had these 2 weeks where people just flock to this place to help us with these projects. It has to do with the success of the comprehensive campaign. And it also has something to do with the mine remediation, when that happens and what actually does happen.
The part that I'd like to talk to you about in terms of our vision is a piece that isn't very widely known yet among Holden constituents, villagers, and that's our endowment funding. It isn't widely known because it hasn't been around for a long time. Holden Village created a foundation only 6 years ago or so, and the first money actually went into that foundation, I think, in 2000, 99 or 2000, so it's only been in there a few years. At the end of 2001, the end of this last year, the endowment funds, or funds that were endowed to the village, totaled about $327,000. That includes the Holden Village Foundation, along with other endowed gifts that we're aware of that are outside of that foundation, but money that people have set aside to benefit Holden's future. Our vision is to raise this amount to $2 million in endowment funds, including planned gifts, in the next few years, and ultimately perhaps create an endowment of $10 million. That's a lot of money to be looking for. The first question that I have when talking about this is, why would Holden need an endowment? Why would we create an endowment option for givers? A very important reason is that many of our supporters want this. They want to be able to create and leave a legacy for Holden Village beyond their years, to know that part of what they've created in their lifetimes will continue to benefit the village and our mission beyond their lifetimes. From our perspective, from Holden's perspective, it certainly provides funds that helps to take us, or will help to take us, through lean years. Especially as we look towards mine remediation and some big uncertainties in our future. As we look even to this summer with some of the travel impacts that September 11th has had, our registrations are down this summer. And so it could easily come to be that over the years, an endowment would be very important to support our activities, even just to keep them at the level that they are at. If we talk about a $2 million endowment, that's not $2 million that we expect to land in our pockets that year. In fact, we don't want it to, but it would create income. And if we say that an endowment, relatively conservatively invested, would generate 5% to the village, then that $2 million endowment would create $100,000. A $10 million endowment would create $500,000 in a year at 5%. The third reason that I think an endowment is important is that it also enables givers to endow specific programs without that large sum of money being dumped into that program in that single year, but instead to receive a significant gift and have it endow or support a particular program over many years to come, and not have us looking at, you know, some gifts that come in for $10,000, $50,000 more, and say, gee, we have to spend this all this year because that's what it's designated for, but to be able to put it there and have it benefit that program over many years. As we look at what the amount of the endowment should be, the potential of $10 million, I don't know that that's been really definitively said or not, but I think we would appreciate input from the supporters of Holden as to what, if there should be a limit, what would be an appropriate limit to an endowment in today's dollars. Many of us have been here for work camp and listening to Dan Erlander, especially last week, talk about manna and mercy and the concept of hoarding manna. Does an endowment constitute hoarding manna? You know, there's some people who who think of it that way. But I think it's important to go back and look at what that endowment would generate for Holden. If we say a $2 million endowment generates $100,000, and look at it in the big picture of our budget. Our budget includes guest registrations and income of about $1 million. So $100,000 assistance from the endowment fund would only replace 10% of our guest revenues in a lean year. Volunteer labor that's donated, the audit allows us to show $470,000. The real number in terms of our total staff at minimum wage even is over $1.3 million for this last year. That's a huge amount of money that's not directly expended by the village, but is certainly utilized by the village. And then finally, the donations, both annual and capital, are about $500,000. So an endowment that might generate $100,000, even to $500,000, isn't as big as it might seem at first relative to our annual budget needs. And the other thing is that that money would not necessarily simply replace existing money that's being utilized or generated by the village, but may allow us to dream dreams like Christopher has talked about and like Janet has talked about in programming that we aren't able to pursue now because of budgetary restrictions, but may be able to pursue more vigorously if we have a guaranteed, almost, source of income in the form of those endowment funds. And yet, I'll go back to the manna hoarding comment and acknowledge that for some people, the endowment is not how they want to give funds. And I think the important thing to know there is that you don't have to give to the endowment, and yet there are others who do want to, and to have that vehicle available. So it's simply providing that opportunity to those who believe that's an important way to make gifts. The vehicles that are now available, the board will be asked to approve a new planned giving policy and some other important documents that have to do with vehicles that are available to make these kinds of gifts. Obviously, there are outright bequests and life insurance proceeds that can be designated to the village. Other opportunities have to do with charitable trusts, where you either have use of an asset over your lifetime and then make a gift of what remains at death, or vice versa, give the village the proceeds during lifetime and then at death have it go to other heirs. There's a lot of very complex and yet very effective mechanisms employed right now by tax and estate planners, which we can assist with, but also encourage you to use your own counsel. The whole planned giving idea is to find vehicles, find ways that are best suited to the donor's needs and financial affairs, and yet benefit also the village effectively. So it's exciting to be in an era in the village that these things are really being pursued and developed. I think it fits in with what a lot of people who support the village want to have access to and be able to do. And it's great to see that that's, at least over the next few years, going to actually come and bear fruit.
You've heard several references to a comprehensive campaign, because if I were you sitting there, particularly with the scope of the projects that Christopher was talking about, I would be thinking, yes, and how are you going to do all of that? Part of all of this development has been a decision that the board made to move forward with what's called a comprehensive campaign, or really much better, it's called From Generation to Generation. And I need to credit Laura Spurrell and a friend of hers for coming up with the concept, or sort of the theme idea, for this fund development campaign to take us into the future. And quite by accident, Laura and I think we were there also, we were in St. Peter, Minnesota, at a Holden Circle this last year, and somebody who was there came up and showed us a picture that they had taken this summer, not staged, completely
small. Oh, it was staged.
It was staged, but not for this.
Yeah,
not,
it is.
Not for the campaign.
Yeah, it was. They were taken specifically for the campaign.
Well, then you set it up.
Yes, I did.
Well, I didn't know that.
I really don't know that. I just thought if it was going to be generation to generation, what more perfect two people to do it?
And well, what it has is Gertrude Lundholm holding Ben and Beth Stewart's little boy's hand, Forrest. They're dancing out on the ark, both of them with these very joyful, spirited looks on the face. The picture did turn out quite wonderful. I really didn't know that you were
there. There's a whole series of pictures, actually. With the two of them, daisies in the mouth.
Yes. But with that decision, and then with the theme, I want to explain in just a little bit more detail what it all is involved. You're getting a sneak preview tonight, because the official announcement of this campaign will be tomorrow night in the context of our anniversary Thanksgiving for the last 40 years and all the good things for which we are grateful. But then how will we pass this on to the next generation? So it will be officially announced tomorrow night. And next week, I ask your prayers and thoughtfulness. Some of you are board members, but we will be asking all the leadership of the village, everyone who serves on the campaign, everyone who is on the board, and all of us sitting here, to really stretch to make five-year pledges to help give this campaign a real boost as it starts out. The goal in the next week is $500,000. So we hope that we will be able to make that goal as we start on asking all of our supporters to assist us. The overall goal is $6.3 million. And those of you who were involved in the last campaign, which had a $1.9 million goal, but we actually raised more money than that, are probably saying, whoo, wow, that's a lot of money. So I want to break it down just a little bit to show you that we are not planning on, private bathrooms. We're not planning on, bearskin rugs or any other kind of extravagant pictures that people might have when they see that amount of money. It's split into three different areas that kind of reflect what we've just been talking about. The first is that of program support, which right now primarily comes through our Cornelia appeal. Each year, just in that appeal, we rely, you all see on the top of your registration fees that fees only cover a portion of the cost. I had someone the other day say, does winter pay for itself? I said, well, actually, the summer doesn't pay for itself. But we have a commitment to keeping the fees affordable and also to increasing the scholarships. So to just maintain the level that we have, it's about $200,000 a year. 5 times 200,000, it's $1 million. So it's very much still within the framework of what we currently do in order to sustain things. It's our belief that as the endowment grows, it will then give us flexible dollars with which we can expand, as well as we anticipate that some people won't participate in the campaign, but they will continue to, leave a donation at the desk before people leave and other ways that people contribute to Folden. The next part that Christopher was referring to is the capital portion, which is $3 million to help sustain what we hope will be projects somewhere in the next 7 to 10 years, that list that he has a detailed accounting of. There's also, it's available in this brochure, which is posted out on the kiosk. One thing that I would like to say relative to the last campaign, because it was successful, things like work camp, which has been so wonderful, and it's wonderful because of all the volunteer labor, but there wouldn't be paint for the buildings and lumber for all of the construction projects and a chipper for the wood that's going through. All of those things are really made possible through the sustain the gift funds that gave us the flexibility to give up 2 weeks of income in the summer and say this is worth it to renew both spirit and facility. And so it's really, that's what we're trying to rebuild the pot, the sustaining the gift pot, so to speak, will run out at the end of this fiscal year that we're going to go into, 2002-2003. So in order to keep up this momentum, it needs to be getting refilled by November of 2003, which is why this campaign is starting now. The other thing that I want to say is that you can't move ahead with such ambitious projects, if it's not for the general feeling of strong collegiality, not only among us, but within all the staff in the village and with the board. We're really very blessed to be enjoying a time of abundance, as Molly referred to, not just in terms of fiscal health, but in terms of a general sense of goodwill and forward-looking, and people who are being nourished in all aspects of their life by coming here. So in a way, at least from my perspective, when this is a time of strength in which we should make progress rather than waiting for the time when we're desperate, so that we can sustain the kind of positive experiences that people have been having. The third piece is in terms of the endowment. So we hope, as Molly has said, to raise $2 million in that area, although some of that will be in plan gifts, not cash that comes in immediately, but people who are promising to share some of their legacy when they die. And so you add all of that up. The additional $300,000 that's in there is for the expenses of the campaign, which does, we have hired someone, Ann Cassidy, whose name is on these materials, who is assisting us in helping us move forward.
She doesn't get the whole $300,000.
No, she does not get the whole $300,000.
But some of it's just materials like the brochures.
That's right.
Now, those will be available for people tomorrow night?
Yes.
Okay.
The other thing, just so you get familiar with this name, is that those who have remembered Holden in their estate plans, there's a brochure that's got another familiar face with a child, is a picture of Wes Preeb and David Christian's little boy back a few years ago on the cover, and it's called the Heritage Circle. So this will be another vehicle that will recognize those who are contributing to Holden in the future. So that's the issue about, I didn't say in terms of the $3 million that we're hoping to raise relative to capital. Our current expenditure in the capital area has been about $300,000 a year. Now, that money will probably go faster if we are successful in a fairly aggressive building improvement plan over the next few years. But so 10 years times 300,000, that obviously reaches us to the 3 million, although I can assure you it was not developed in that way. Christopher has submitted umpteen drafts. Well, if we do this and if we don't do that and if we have this, in order to try and arrive at as realistic a budget as you can make when you're planning far ahead. We want to make sure that there are some time for you to ask questions, to express any concerns, or ideas that you have as we move forward in any of these aspects.
I have two questions. I'd like to know if you projected in this 10-year plan what the annual cost would be to carry it through. That's one question. The other one is, what percentage of the cost are the guests paying now? You said it doesn't cover all of the expenses that would normally be if you were a resort.
Right. Molly, how about if you answer the percentage question? Because it depends on what you divide by.
The accountant will say it all depends. But a guideline would be between 75% and 80%. Of the costs of running the village are covered by guest revenues. That's if you don't include the value of the guest of the volunteer labor that we have part of our income.
Yeah.
If you include that, then it's probably less than 50% that's covered by registrations.
And then the other part of your question in terms of the annual revenue, as I indicated, we currently are subsidized about $200,000 a year. We're budgeting in here on the basis of $200,000, even though we know that our costs will increase. And so that is to be offset by revenue that will start coming in from endowment funds, because certainly one of the original ideas is recognizing that many of our founding leadership and supporters are people who are beginning to pass on. In the last few years, a number of beloved people have died. And so we are beginning to get some of these gifts. And so hopefully that vehicle will increase and will supplement the $200,000 that we're projecting. Because surely at the end of 10 years, it will be much more than $200,000 a year that will be needed.
And Christopher said it takes $300,000 just to maintain the place.
That's in the capital area.
But I mean the total budget for the whole thing amortized over 10 years.
Yeah, our total budget is well over $1 million.
It's 1.7 million
yeah,
over there.
1.7 million. Now that includes, again, some volunteer labor in that number. Without that, it's a little over $1 million. And again, there's the registrations that cover part and the donations that cover part of that $1 million. So Diane's figure of $200,000 to $300,000 in donations plus the registration cover that expense base. And as we go forward in 10 years, costs will go up, registrations will go up, we'll receive the $200,000 as part of the comprehensive campaign for a number of years, and hope that as that comprehensive campaign money begins to decrease, then the money from the endowment will come in to supplement that along with renewed annual giving. So yeah, those costs will go up, but hopefully resources will go up as well as we go forward.
With some of the renovations and moving of spaces around, will that be increasing the spaces available for guests, or will that decrease?
Part of the plan that led to all of the reconfigurations, we looked at a number of needs that we had. And a decision was made that we would not be increasing the number of beds, that the primary needs were in the programmatic area, when people can't find a place to meet, when the arts and crafts is either too cold or too isolated. They were all pretty much in the programmatic area. So the shifting of beds, in other words, the loss of beds here that are guest beds, and we're talking, again, please think several years, might shift over to the upper part of Lodge 6, where right now we often house what we call long short-term or short-long-term. But anyway, staff that are not here for a year but are making an extended time, and we do our best to give them a room of their own. It doesn't always work out that way. That would be the kind of staff. We're not going to get more long-term staff. But that would be the kind of staff that then would be able to be in Chalet 2, possibly in smaller rooms than they have here, but at least in that extended comfort of having a living room and living in your chalet in a more community-like atmosphere.
And that means that Lodge 6 would be used for guests?
Yes. Some of these places will be mixed, because it will depend on the time of year. If there's an extraordinary, you know how at Christmas and Thanksgiving we suddenly need extra beds because of the insulation and heating systems, we will have the possibility of closing the floor and not using it and yet having it available for really peak times.
That's what I was going to emphasize, that with the renovating of the buildings, that will give more opportunity for not necessarily more guests, but more guest nights over the period of a year, because the fall and the spring would be, you could utilize the buildings a little better, and also during the winter, although that's a little fragile.
Well, because of the power issues,
yep.
Although that should be greatly improved, the remodel of Agape reduced the power consumption by 70%. Did I say that correctly?
Really?
So you can just imagine if we get, we expect to get a lot more mileage out of our power situation when this is accomplished. Just a second, though. I think there was somebody else with a hand.
I was just going to add to that. I think we're trying to open up the box that Lodge 6 or Lodge 1 doesn't always have to be staffed. Maybe Lodge 4 would be staffed. Just we're trying to be open to all kinds of possibilities.
We'll have the same number of beds before and after, and probably a similar ratio of staff beds and guest beds, but we have a lot more possibilities. We'd be a lot more flexible about where those beds are and how they're used and during what seasons they're used.
Because this is the
lower floor, watch one not completely handicap accessible. Someone's in a wheelchair. Yeah.
It is.
A wheelchair, not, shower, not, and everything.
Mm-hmm. Not every room is.
No, but I mean, so that someone, if someone came in a wheelchair, that there's a shower facility. Now, from before this, that's not been true.
Lodge 1 completely complies with the American Disabilities Act for both entrance and bathrooms, and the number, several of the guest rooms have.
So I mean, that's a new flexibility that the village has not had today.
In terms of buildings being winterized, how many beds can the village accommodate that are in winterized buildings?
Currently?
Well, we have had approximately 130 beds in the past that are possible in the wintertime. We have many more than that are possible now with Lodge 1 being available in the wintertime. That doesn't mean that we'll use them all, but we have that flexibility now.
With that flexibility, is it logical to expect that the winter census might increase?
We have that choice to make. There are other limitations, as Diane mentioned, the road, the dining hall, the electricity. So there will be something else will limit that population rather than the number of beds.
One of the other things, to go back to the programmatic priority, is that another one of the aspects there is to increase the use of Holden for sabbatical time of all kinds. Not only for clergy, but for people in career change times or other times of transition. And those are not necessarily people who are wanting lots of program as much as they are wanting quiet, a library, art and craft possibilities, opportunities to volunteer, participate in the heartfelt conversation. So that could be a way that that a few beds would be able to be increased, because we'd like to foster that.
Another deep desire that I've had ever since I've been here is to really look at the learning community that's part of the winter and to be creative with that. And I think not only sabbaticals, but what other sorts of things can we offer? We've had a variety of things over the years, lifestyle, enrichment program, winter program, sojourn, those sorts of things. My question is, what's the next manifestation of that at this time?
When Christopher was talking about all those projected projects, it seems really almost overwhelming. And when you were talking when we started the work week about how it's helpful to have people come and do a work week like this, I was thinking that in communities that I was a part of in years past, ashrams, even the International Hosteling Association, in the Seattle Mountaineers, for example, it was just expected that seva, you know, or the concept of karma yoga, was just part and parcel of being there, and that you always had a task or you always had a chore, and it was healthy and it was invigorating. And some of those organizations don't do that anymore, and we feel that it's been a loss for the staff, for the full-time staff, because they don't get as much help, but also for everybody that uses the facility. So I'm just thinking that it would seem really appropriate for me, just for everyone that came here, to feel that they did seva each day. You know, they did service of some form, 45 minutes, an hour maybe. And that certain things like that would take some of the load off the staff. Even the idea of everyone bringing their own towel, I think about all the electricity that goes into drying towels. You know, you put towels in the dryer, you don't need towel, you need a tiny little thing. Just little things like that. I know that doesn't add up to a whole lot in the face of magnitude that you're talking about, but I would put in a vote for seva.
Tom, I wish that you sound like you read our key strategies, because in a section around, I can't remember the overall wording, about increasing participation in village life, we very much talked about, and again, work camp is a manifestation of trying to blur that line between staff and guests as was once part of the vitality here. It's always been part of the vitality, but we are really working at it. There's going to be opportunities all summer long. You probably saw it in the information books in your room. We're going to be much more organized about ways that people can volunteer and participate of all ages. So.
I really don't know in regard to a program space. Is the Village Center used in the summertime at all?
In the summertime.
For teaching?
It's not used as much as it used to be. It could be used more.
You know, until you accomplish the goals that you've described, you know, it's not perhaps as attractive for classes as a smaller room, but a smaller space might be created when you have a need for additional teaching.
One of the many things that was talked about in the process of some of these plans was whether or not the stage, for example, could be utilized to supplement the arts and crafts area. And some of the It sort of became difficult to conceive relative to things that would have to be carted back and forth or put away, or if the stage was used. And, you know, I mean, certainly there are things that we can do in the meantime, but it's probably not the ideal thing to strive for in terms of the plans over the long run.
I guess I was thinking you might be looking for teaching space. Mm-hmm. And that was simple to do.
Right. Yes. But apart from questions, any comments? Concerns? Oh, yes, right.
Well, it's impossible to predict the dynamic that the remediation program is going to have on community life. And but we know that it really is going to change it, and to be brave about meeting that kind of challenge, whatever it is. I expect it will be more instead of less, mm-hmm. more dynamics, more adjusting on the part of the village instead of less. It was reported last night that there might be two or maybe three staff to maintain that. And I thought, three?
Yeah.
Three? a dozen, maybe. Probably 15 or 20. But, I mean, so it's all unknown. But to be brave, I mean, we hold the village, we have to be brave about this
I really appreciate you saying that, because it's really the vision and wisdom of the board that we have two things going on at the same time. One is some of the more anxious aspects of the remediation. The other is that the sustaining the gift money is going to run out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, to come to this point takes a tremendous amount of planning. This has been going on well for a year and a half.
Yeah.
So you can say, well, I guess we better not do anything, because, you know, the remediation might mess it up, and then find ourselves in this great dilemma of having created out of fear a scarcity mentality in the area of programming and facilities and in all aspects. So I do appreciate and have a lot of gratitude that the board really is the group that had the courage, and I think going back to the original spirit of the surprising gift attitude, the sense of abundance, that we are called here, you know, for God's own purpose, and that even as we do our best to plan and do our best to be good stewards, that we do know that all of this, including our donations, are put in God's hands for God's service. So I do think that this is a time of some risk and challenge.
Because it seems to me, even as a guest, I was worried of anxiety when the Forest Service said they were going to, you know, put this gravel on top of the tailings, and what was that going to be, an impact to the village? And
one of the main troubles, feel the anxiety when the talk of that began, and yet when it actually happened, we got a wider road out of it, less dust storms out of it. It's not that it probably wasn't disruptive at some level for people that lived in the village more than just the week at a time. But the reality is the village ended up with a lot of great gifts out of it. And I don't know why we shouldn't move forward with that kind of optimism that this will be true again.
Mm-hmm. It can be a great opportunity for the village, mm-hmm. the mind remediation.
Just the fact that it's going to happen and end all that unknown that we've had for so many years.
Around the edge, it seems like there's a real, genuine sensitivity on the part of the Forest Service to our needs. Is that fair? I mean, that's kind of what I feel, and that's in their publicity. Are you feeling that that's authentic?
It certainly is authentic, and particularly when you talk about the individuals who we deal with. They care a great deal about the village. They're very sensitive to our needs. But it's at the same time important to remember there's a lot of powerful forces at work here. And ultimately, our voice will be well listened to, but we don't really know how powerful it will be. But we're encouraged greatly by the carefulness in which they're listening to us at this point.
Well, anybody that comes to the village for any part of this that I've ever talked to, it's like they're here for a very short period of time and they get it. They understand what this place is about and why what they're doing plays into that. I mean, it's really almost fun to watch the passive evangelism that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple questions, maybe they're inappropriate at this time, but I wanted to ask about the current project. But before I do, I need to comment about Diane's bus driving.
are you talking about the risk in the village?
No. I'm a chainsaw operator, along with there's a couple others in the room too. And at the end of the day, we go up to the chainsaw shack, which is across the street from where the buses are parked. And I was up there, I don't know what day it was, yesterday or the day before, cleaning my saw, and I saw the bus coming up there, and I didn't pay much attention. I no more than turned around, and the driver came out. The bus was parked, and the driver came out, and it was Diane, and she said something to the effect, "How did I do?" And I had to confess I didn't watch her, but it took her only a moment, and I looked up there, and I said, "I can't even tell which bus you parked. They're only about this far apart, and there were four of them, and they're all perfectly in line, and very parallel." So I didn't watch it, but she must have done a good job. Anyway, the question I have, if I could ask it, of the materials you used, how much of that was donated, if any? And is there a dollar value, the last couple of weeks? And is there any dollar value to the maintenance and capital improvements that have been accomplished these 2 weeks? I know it's pretty hard to nail that down, you should.
The work camp you're talking about?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks. If you could put a dollar value on what was done.
Well, I think Molly's been working on putting a dollar value on the labor that's been donated these last 2 weeks. The materials, for the most part, were purchased that we've been using.
Yeah. The labor, again, using just that minimum wage calculation.
And that's how much?
It's $6.72 okay. an hour. That's probably last year's minimum wage. I don't know what it is this year. At that, it's over $100,000 in labor just in this two-week period. And we think we've probably given up $30,000 to $40,000 in registration revenue, but that certainly... and again, that's a minimum wage, which I don't think anybody would do anything that was done this week. Especially not as hard as everybody worked.
We're almost to the time where we should be transitioning over to Vespers. Thank you for much for coming and being interested in the future, and especially thank you for all the contribution of labor and love that's gone on these 2 weeks. We all feel just so touched and overwhelmed by it. We really appreciate it very much.
I'd like to say on behalf of the board that you can see why we feel very confident right now in the leadership of the village.